Whether it's prison reform, the plight of refugees, music education for all, or the industry-defining In War and Peace, opera superstar Joyce DiDonato transcends the physical confines of the concert hall. DiDonato has long been an artist who has dedicated herself to creating and initiating projects that challenge and galvanize the public. Her latest initiative, Eden, is one that she will dedicate much of her time over the next 4 years to, uniting music, drama, education, and organizational partnerships. The Eden Project includes an astonishing new recording released on Erato Warner Classics. Eden's long-term impact and legacy will be far-reaching, and Joyce DiDonato is here with us to discuss all of it. Hi, Joyce. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hi, Max. I'm thrilled to be here.
Joyce, your passionate belief and the driving force behind Eden is that a collective return to our best selves is needed, particularly with all the chaos and division plaguing the world today.
Well, I grew up in a suburb of Kansas City in the 80s. I remember the threat of the Cold War, and I remember the ecstasy of feeling like, oh, we finally figured it all out when the Berlin Wall fell. And we had this brief little sublime moment where all felt right with the world, at least, you know, the Western world as we were experiencing it. And to see that shattered sort of systematically over the last two decades, I suppose, has been really heart-wrenching to watch. And regardless of what your political viewpoint is right now, there's no denying that we are deeply divided. And that's a very painful thing to witness. For a brief moment in time, we had it all figured out. We were firing on all cylinders, we were united, we were working together. And certainly throughout history, we have extraordinary examples of what happens, especially in the American mentality of working together and building together. I mean, we put ourselves on the moon, which is quite an extraordinary thing. I've always considered myself as a citizen before being an artist, but as a musician, as a singer, as an artist, that is how I meet the world. And I have a need to express and to try and bring understanding and comprehension to the world around me through music. That was the genesis of this project, that this idea of what is keeping us as a society and also as individuals from building a world that is peaceful, a world that is thriving, even utopian, if I can dare say that. I think hopefully all your listeners here have all experienced a moment either on a mountaintop or at a lake shore or in an open field or watching a sunset or watching the rainbow emerge out of the storm where we went, oh wow, this is good. I want to bottle this moment. The birth of a child. I want to bottle this moment forever as that newborn is looking up at me and all feels right with the world. Even as naive as it perhaps sounds, Eden is a callback to those moments and saying, what will it take for us to not just bottle that moment, but continue to create it, continue to nurture that? And if we're putting our energy more into the nurturing of those moments, then we're not against anything. It's not us and them, or me and you, or theirs and ours.
Un tragino nel suo stile amoroso sarosa rote testi tra cogini non pigiana non i vestiti.
The project title Eden, of course, naturally references In the Garden of Eden.
Sort of going back to that idea of, I grew up in Kansas City, right? And I remember sitting on our front porch, listening to the tornado siren sound and watching that greenish, gray, blue stillness take over the sky. And I remember as a kid, the excitement of the doom and the fear and the astonishment of the beauty of watching this and the sense of Mother Nature being so powerful in that moment. And ready to run to the basement to take cover, but at the same time not wanting to miss one moment of the storm unfolding. And I remember that as such a strong sensation of, oh my gosh, we're so small. There's so much destruction that is in front of our eyes right now on the television, the newspapers, on the news. The headlines are blazing and blaring. I'm in Amsterdam right now, and I go out and I'm in this park that's hundreds of years old, and the ducks are in the pond, and the trees are still growing very quietly, the buds are starting to appear on the tree. It puts me in perspective of the sense of eternity that is around us rather than this exact moment. And it reminds me that we have a choice of what direction we're going in. There's a quote from the playwright Jonathan Larson. The opposite of war is not peace, but it's creation. And this has had a real profound impact on me because I look at the world sometimes and I don't necessarily see Eden. Certainly not if I'm looking at the headlines and not if I'm on social media too often. It doesn't feel like I'm in paradise. Then I think, okay, if I'm going to put my energy into creation, I don't know if I'm going to save the world, but I'm going to certainly make my corner of it a bit more bearable. And creation has to do with what words I'm using. How I'm interacting with people, the dynamic I'm creating with the people around me. The dynamic that I'm creating in my house, in my garden, in what I contribute to the world. The kinds of seeds that I'm planting, either in the ground or seeds of ideas. I just think that people are much more powerful than they realize. If I'm involved in a really divisive conversation, I don't know that I'm creating something good. I feel like there's destruction and division there rather than creation. It's this call to our better selves. Ultimately, it's how we all want to live. We want to know that we're safe. We want to know that we're being heard. We want to know that our presence here matters. And I think sometimes the fight for territory and the fight for my side versus your side is because I fear that I don't matter, that my presence in my community or online, that I'm not being heard. And so I dig in and I'm trying to make my voice more heard. For me, Eden is that call where you look at the natural world, you look at the musical world. Every note or every bird or blade of grass has its place. It's not competing. It's trying to build its house. It's taking the food that it needs. It's depositing its fertilizer. This miraculous balance. And I just feel like humanity's out of balance right now. And we can look to music and we can look to the natural world to remember and be inspired about what harmony looks like, what equality, equilibrium looks like.
As you've pointed out, you're a problem solver, a dreamer, and an optimist. And your time during the pandemic, as the world went quiet, you were still observing the flowers as they came up in the ground. So despite all of our issues of shutdowns and closures, there were these wondrous, unassuming miracles bursting out of the ground.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit naive, but it's the truth. It's actually what has been happening for eons. And I find it to be an incredible teacher. All of these flowers coming out of the ground, they take just the amount of water they need. They take the nutrients that are hopefully thriving in the soil. And they come out when it's their time to feel the sun, when it's their time to bloom. And they become a part of that ecosystem. Ecosystem, that community, and they provide food and pollen and shelter for other organisms, and they come into flower regardless of the external circumstances that are happening around them. They do their job, and then they go back into the earth to rest. It couldn't be more simple. And in that simplicity, as is often the case, we're running around hoarding and trying to take ours and take what we have earned and take what we deserve. And it worries me because that has a lot of repercussions. We've lost the trust factor, and that trust still exists in the natural world. And you see the results of that kind of trust in an ecosystem, that things remain balanced and everything has what it needs.
Well, we look around at the cement and the industry and pain and destruction of the world, which is very overwhelming, and we have doubts. And, you know, you think, well, what can I do and what difference can I make? And when you ask these questions of yourself, you seek out the comfort and connection to music.
There's an inherent beauty and truth that is in the works of Mozart and Handel. There's a timelessness. There's something that connects us to something outside of ourselves. It gives us a little bit of relief from the constant commentary and the constant fight and the concrete technical world that we're just immersed in the 21st century.
As with rosy steps on advancing drive the shades of night, so from virtuous toils we're born.
I think in my experience, whether I'm singing at Sing Sing Prison, or I'm in a refugee camp, or I'm singing for opening night at the Metropolitan Opera, or in my hometown of Kansas City, my experience is that when people encounter beauty and truth in this kind of music, it has a really transformative effect. It brings a kind of serenity, it brings comfort. There's a comfort in knowing that you're not the only one that has suffered grief and fear and ostracization and terror in some cases. And there's something really deeply beautiful about being able to go to a place and find that kind of comfort.
Twist toils.
Well, let's talk about the music a bit. Collaborating with your longstanding orchestral partners, Il Pomodoro, led by conductor Maxim Emelianidzes, you've created a really stunning recording that combines timeless opera arias along with contemporary works. The program ranges from the 17th to the 21st century, and all the music relates to timeless themes of nature that have captivated composers over the centuries. Can you talk about the repertoire overall on the album?
It's a huge scan of repertoire, all done with original instrument orchestra, so it's gut strings and original winds. But from my perspective, it feels like it's a real portrait of the kind of repertoire that I've done throughout my career. I go back as far as Monteverdi and Handel, the origins of opera. All the way through to world premieres. And it really is such a delight for me to present this, including some American music, which is never featured with a typical Baroque orchestra, Ives and Copland. It's been a joy to feel the enthusiasm of the orchestra to stretch themselves and to try this repertoire that is very far outside of their comfort zone. But I think in terms of it fitting into this theme of Eden, what I find is that it presents a real sense of timelessness. And it shows the span of the natural world throughout the centuries and how composers and poets and librettists have always turned to the natural world to try and figure out their place within it. Where do we fit in with the world around us? And what can we take? And in some cases, for example, in the Mahler, where the natural world was such an influence in his life as a composer, we feel the comfort and the sense of home and the sense of tranquility that he finds in nature. There's a fantastic piece by Cavalli called Pianti Ombrose, where the character is looking out and seeing the devastation of the world around them, the burnt fields and the verdant mountains that used to be green and they've been burned and they are desolate and gone. And that aria leads into a plea to say, please, no more war. That's 350 years old, that piece. And here I am on stage in Amsterdam or in Kansas City or in Carnegie Hall saying the same line, no more war. And I mean it today, I'm sure, just as much as the singer who meant it when it first debuted 300 years ago. And so it's a kind of existential cry to humanity to finally learn the lesson. Through this span of repertoire, we find that the human condition is, in a way, experiencing the same wishes and desires and hopes and longings that they have throughout time.
And of course, you start so appropriately with the Ives, the 1908 unanswered question. It's such a haunting piece. Your part is traditionally one that's played by the trumpet.
This was Maxime's idea. Even though it's a Baroque orchestra, original instruments, we knew from the very beginning we wanted to commission a piece, and we also didn't want to just be tied to the works of Handel. We were exploring repertoire, and he said, do you know the unanswered question by Ives? Because we were also talking a lot about all these huge questions that plague a lot of people, and it just felt like a really extraordinary and groundbreaking opening to this concert. The minute he put it on for us, the hairs on the back of my neck went up. I thought, this is how the project starts. This is how we begin Eden, how we enter into this project. Because it's such an evocative and haunting and eternal kind of piece. It feels without time, but at the same time, there's this sort of relentless questioning of what are we doing? Where are we going? Who am I? Why are we here?
And then there's the new work that you commissioned, which is really at the heart of the project, the world premiere of Oscar-winning composer Rachel Portman, The First Morning of the World. Your friend, American poet and writer Jean Scheer, supplies the evocative text.
This is one reason the album is meant to be listened to consecutively, because we start with the unanswered question. There's no vocals, there's no text, but it's clearly a musical question being posed. And the first line of Jean's piece is, there's a language without question marks.
There's a language without question marks.
You can read it in the rings of trees. And in the wind and the river, and in the sound of birds singing. Has their song changed since the first morning of the world? It requires our imagination to go back in time to imagine what that first morning might have looked like, felt like, sounded like. It is a call to go deeper into this language that isn't English, this language that's not necessarily mathematical, but lives in the world all around us.
And then, of course, in the Marini Scherzi, the Opus 5. That really appealing Renaissance guitar sound. Of course, the title translates in English to roughly "with the stars in the sky."
Yeah, it's quite a deep piece. It gets a little bit religious as well, but it's also, as you'll hear in the rhythm and the feel of it, it starts to feel like the heat of the sun comes in and it just explodes us right into summer. And life is brimming and it feels like we're getting carried away and we're losing our inhibitions and ourselves. It's quite a little bit raucous in Renaissance terms. And it just feels like it's that blast of sunshine where we just start to lose ourselves in the joy of not a care in the world.
And then in the aria from the 18th century composer Josef Myslivecek's oratorio Adam and Eve, the piece kind of lists these natural disasters, floods and fires and
When I read the text, it was just overwhelming. Bottom line is, my sword of justice will be covered in blood, and I will destroy the seashores, and I will burn the hills, and spread a plague among you. And that's not to take a whole biblical stand, but the main thrust of it, that the angel finishes with, is you have forgotten who created you, which I take to mean you've forgotten your essence. You've forgotten that you are a part of all of this. You have become drunk and inebriated on your own power. And that is not the point here.
Then we come back to some environmental counterbalance from the benevolent words and perspective of Emily Dickinson in Copland's 8 poems.
This was a really important inclusion for me on the album because in the headlines today, nature is getting a really hard rap. It's climate change, climate destruction, and we're terrified by the tsunamis and the forest fires, rightly so, in my opinion. It is overwhelming to feel the wrath of the natural world right now. Still surrounded by the nurturing, beautiful, extraordinary quality of the morning dew and the moon that rises and the sun that sets and the trees that provide shade and the soft spring rain that comes and brings out the April flowers. And I think we would be really well served if we spend a lot of time reconnecting to that, to the benevolent, nurturing beauty and the perfection of the natural world that is around us, the tranquility that that can still bring. Not losing sight of what is happening around us as well, but that's not the only story that we're living.
Joyce DiDonato, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure, Max. Thank you so much.